Are you a new autism mom? Are you new to the world of autism and maybe you're confused or frustrated or unsure? Well, this is the show for you. Welcome again, families, to another episode of Thriving Autism Families. I'm your host, Crystal Sanford, and we, as much as possible, like to offer to you insight, humor, and hope along your autism parenting journey. Our topic today is Autism Moms 101. So you are in store for a great time as we share together the things that we have learned along our autism parenting journey. So again, I'm Crystal Sanford, your host. I am a special education advocate. I'm an autism mom and a speech pathologist. And I have my wonderful guests here today, Christine Domingo and Alondra Galvin. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Alondra and Christine work with me in our small but mighty consulting practice. We all happen to be autism moms, and we have learned a lot of tips that we would love to share with you in today's episode. Always know, families, that the information that is shared here is for your informational purposes only. If you are in need of legal or medical advice, please do contact a professional in that area. And also, always know that our show is sponsored by the Sanford Autism Advocacy Group. We offer powerful advocacy services, helping you get access to the education your child deserves. So again, our topic today is Autism Mom 101, and we have Christine Domingo. Christine is an amazing autism and IEP parent advocate. She's a San Diego, California native, and she strives to find ways to make effective, positive change within her surrounding community. Christine's advocacy journey began in 2015 when her son was diagnosed with autism. And at that time, she received extensive parent training in ABA, communication, and occupational therapy services. Christine strives to keep current with her advocacy development. She's a member of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, and she's also working toward her 2022 Special Education Law and Advocacy certification. In her free time, Christine enjoys music, dance, creating macrame and fiber arts, and spending time with her family. We also have Alondra Galvin. Alondra is a mom of a wonderful six-year-old boy who's also on the autism spectrum, and she's a passionate IEP advocate. She started her own family journey when her son was identified as autistic at age 18 months. The process of a diagnosis was long and tiring, but thankfully, Alondra's love for reading and researching helped her to prepare for the long road ahead of them. Alondra has become a registered behavioral technician, and she is now transitioned into IEP advocacy. So, welcome, ladies. I'm so glad to have you here, and thank you for the opportunity to hear from you and for your willingness to be transparent and sharing your story.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So, Christine, I'd love to start with you. Tell us just a little bit more about your story. I really do value a story. I believe that everyone has a story to share. So we'd love to hear a little bit more about your story. What did life look like for you before and after your son's diagnosis?
I think life before his diagnosis was it was a life of uncertainty for sure. I have an older daughter, and I would kind of compare stages of development, as you will. I mean, not on purpose, but I would just happen to say, "Oh, well, he's not really doing this the way that my daughter was doing this," or I noticed just certain communication things that that he wasn't doing, and he wasn't saying any words at the age of two and a half. And I actually had some family members that worked within the autism community. And so I would talk to them about it, and they would just say, "Well, have you ever thought about, getting him evaluated?" Or just to kind of clear up some answers that I had in my mind. And then so I raised that with his pediatrician, and she kind of seconded that suggestion. And she led me in the direction of regional center, which was so wonderful. I was so thankful for that. And at regional center, my son was evaluated sure enough, he was diagnosed at 2.5 with autism. And we received, we had a case manager, and we kind of just dove right in to early intervention therapies. We did ABA, OT, speech therapy, physical therapy as well. But yeah, we just were in it. We were doing it. And so that was kind of our life for a long time. I mean, in the earlier years, it was just really focusing on that and kind of getting him to communicate with us more and for us to understand him more. So it was, the whole family got involved. I was really thankful for that process. But then after his diagnosis, we kind of engulfed ourselves in that world of, you know, this is our schedule, this is what we're doing. I always say that period of time, I coin it my sweaty years because he also had an extreme elopement issue. Uh-huh. And so there would be moments where I'm picking up my daughter from school and I kind of have him, we're holding hands, and then he just kind of books and takes off. And so right. I'm just like sprinting, like I'm in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like on campus, like through families, and he's so fast. And so yeah, that was my sweatier period when he had his elopement issue. And then addressing that with ABA therapy, we were able to develop a program where we kind of got him to understand, you know, safety, staying close to mom, you know, sidewalks are our friend, things like that. So, I mean, it worked out. He's 9 and he doesn't have an elopement issue anymore. So I'm really thankful for that.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that from the beginning. You know, and if parents, you're listening and you're not from California, you might wonder, well, it's a regional center. But in California, there is an entity that is statewide and that will provide early intervention services. And in other states, it might be Exceptional Family Resource Center or something similar that is governed by the state that provides that early intervention support. And so that's awesome, Christine, that you got access to that and you made it through those sweaty years. I remember those times, you know, my daughter as well was identified. She was, we didn't get a chance to do regional center and early intervention. She was identified at 3.5 because nobody wanted to listen to me because autism presents so differently in girls. So, you know, I remember those days when she would elope as well, but she was such an interesting eloper as she would just kind of wander to things that were of interest to her without giving me any notice. But in a grocery store, she would always end up in the produce section. And she would be near the broccoli. And it never would fail. If we couldn't find her in a grocery store, she was near the broccoli. She was looking at the broccoli, examining the broccoli. She got to know the produce people. I mean, it was like, oh, wow. At least we had a way to pinpoint her in a grocery store. But, you know, in other places, she may just wander to whatever was of interest to her, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You know, even now she's 11. And sometimes I still have to say, hey, let me know before you go over there. Let me, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But let's hear from you, Alondra. Let's hear about your story, you know, early on for your son, because now you're one of the unfortunate, but, you know, in your case, you guys were able to pinpoint it a little earlier at 18 months.
Yeah. Before going through all that autism, you know, wondering if he had autism. His dad actually has a lot of history of neural disabilities in their family. They have a lot of cerebral palsy, autism, ADHD, Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And so when I was pregnant, it was one of those, you know, those questionnaires that the doctors do where they're trying to learn all the family history and all that. And it was during one of the questionnaires where I started wondering, like, okay, all right, okay. So I need to brace myself if because it was really high on their side of the family. Okay. So when he was about a year, like maybe 13, 14 months, mm-hmm. I started noticing that he was very talkative, you know, started talking a lot of sounds, mama, dada. And then all of a sudden, like exactly like at 15 months, it just stopped.
Wow.
Everything stopped. And he wasn't saying anything. He went from a loud baby to like the quiet one. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't saying anything. He was just like always looking around. He was just like, wasn't playing with the toys, like any toys. Mm-hmm. And I started getting really worried, because at one point he would just go to a corner and mm-hmm. just stay there. And so I started thinking, we went to the pediatrician. I think it was at, I made it like a very fast appointment. You know, sometimes at Kaiser you can do, before the pandemic, you could have done really fast appointments. Yeah. And so I told him, I'm like, you know what, this is my concern. He stopped talking. You know, it was to the point where potty training too was starting to get really hard. It was during that time. And it was just, he would just, you know, do his accidents anywhere and without even like him realizing. So I started telling all this to the doctor, and he's like, you know what? It sounds like maybe. So I'm definitely going to suggest you reaching out. He pointed me to the right direction, to the regional center. Mm-hmm. And the regional center started doing their thing. It took like maybe 3 to 4 months. Okay. And yeah, sure enough, there was that diagnosis. And they started saying that, okay, so now, you know, it was like, they were trying to tell me that he didn't have it at first, because he had a, I don't know, maybe sometimes they were saying, oh, he's high functioning. He does a lot of things, but he's just the talking part. And I'm like, no, I like, you know, as a mom, you see everything, and they only see him like for an hour. You know, they do the studies for like an hour. And I'm like, no, there's other things going on. He does this, and they're like, okay, well. And so they actually studied him for like throughout the two until like maybe, I don't know, 21 months. That's when they stopped, and they said, okay, yeah. So he has autism. They finally started, they finally said them to themselves, like, okay, so he's autistic. Okay. So that's that. And then we did the early intervention, and you know, after three, they still did some of the things that with the regional center, and you know, ever since then. And after the diagnosis, it was hard. Although I kind of knew it from the beginning, mm-hmm. it was hard, because from my mom's side of the family, you know, it was just my mom. It was like, she still doesn't believe it at this point. He's 6 years old, and she's like, no, he's fine. He doesn't have anything. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Keep saying that to yourself. Uh-huh. And so it wasn't so much of a, they weren't so much of a believer. But my grandmother actually told me, I had like a meltdown after that diagnosis, and my grandma was staying with us at the time. And she said something to me where she was like, well, you know, if you can't understand them, then what are you going to do to understand it? Like, if you can't change mm-hmm. it, what are you doing to understand it?
Yeah, that's good. So
that's when I decided to switch everything around. And I started looking into autism, and I started looking into behavioral issues. And that's why I became an RABT.
Wow, that's really powerful. You know, that your grandma, as much as you said, like on your side of the family, they weren't as, you know, familiar maybe even in understanding about autism and in agreement as much. But your grandma gave you some really good words of wisdom that I think have carried you along and helped you to learn in your journey, and now to the point that you're helping other families.
Yeah, no, my grandma's, I think it's because of the fact that she saw the sadness in me mm-hmm. and she saw what I was going through. She was like, okay, I know this is real for her. Mm-hmm. And my grandma and I were always so close.
Okay.
So, you know, and she would always tell me exactly what I needed to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Right on point there. Amazing. Well, you know, and I know parents, as you're listening, you probably can, you know, if you're an autism mom, I'm sure you can relate on some level. You know, I've heard so many stories over the years, you know, parents will say, well, he had words up until this point, and then all of a sudden he didn't, you know, I've heard that so many times. Or, you know, pediatricians or people who will say, oh, well, maybe it's not autism. You know, he's a boy, or he's, you know, or it's this or that. Are there things that you guys have maybe heard or experienced, you know, along your journey?
I've definitely heard all of those, things. Yeah. I've had, you know, family and friends of mine say, oh, he's a boy, he'll grow out of it, or just wait. Boys are late bloomers, kind of thing. Yeah. And then even after, even post-diagnosis, people were still kind of like, I don't think so. I think that's a lot. I mean, I've even had someone say, oh, that's awfully young to get a diagnosis. You know, yeah. You get a lot of these extra things.
Yeah.
But I think that it's always important to just kind of trust your gut, and you know your child best. So even if there's all these opinions about what you're doing at, in that moment, I don't think that, I mean, it doesn't really affect you, or it shouldn't.
Yeah, that's good. You know, it's hard sometimes not to, I think, as a mom, because, you know, for the majority of moms, like being a mom, right, is it brings so much joy, so much value to you as a person. And to know that there's something going on with your kid that you can't fix, you can't, you know, necessarily help make better. You know, it's hard to maybe hear and just, you know, people's ignorance sometimes, you know, it's just ignorance. It's sometimes hard to hear, but I love the words that you say, you know, we shouldn't take it personally, and we should just really trust our gut, know who our kids are, you know, and also see the wonderful things about our kiddos as well. Sometimes that gets lost. You know, we have, my daughter's 11 now. So, you know, we've always talked about how, you know, she's amazing. My dad, before he passed, because he passed when she was just a time around her diagnosis, actually. So he never even knew about the diagnosis, but he would always call her Amazing Grace. And we always tell her, you know, you are amazing. You really are. You've got some great skills. You've got some superpower skills. You know, you can hear things like a pin drop, like other people can hear, you know. Mm-hmm. So we really try to build that up in her and to give her a piece of confidence. And so it's something for us to consider as well.